Welcome to another episode of Health Policy Essentials, the podcast that explores key policy issues for hospitals that provide safety net care. I am Jason Prey, Vice President of Legislative Affairs at America's Essential Hospitals. Today, we're going to discuss how essential hospitals are facilitating access to quality care in rural areas. Joining us today for the discussion are Dr. Chris Lombardozzi, the Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at Spartanburg Regional Healthcare System, and Evan Schweikert, a policy analyst here at America's Essential Hospitals. So to those listeners who have logged into our podcast before, you know, we like to jump right into it. So I want to get to some questions for our experts here, and I can get out of the way of a good conversation. I think most of our listeners may think of the AEH membership of more of a kind of urban and university-based membership. And while that's definitely an important aspect of who our membership is made up of, we do have a pretty significant presence in more of rural America. So, you know, I'm going to turn to Evan first to kind of talk about the membership and our rural footprint. So, Evan, can you kind of inform our listeners a little bit about the specific findings on our membership's rural footprint, and how does that underscore what folks may already know about our membership and our association, and how does that illuminate something new to them?
Yeah, so what we found is that essential hospitals have a really diverse membership, and that about one third of them are fully urban, about one third are fully rural, and one third operate as a sort of an urban campus with a really broad rural footprint. We found that 12% of essential hospitals are critical access and 9% are sole community hospitals. Essential hospitals are supporting other facilities, they're triaging the most severe and complex patients, and they're reaching patients in their homes, all while developing the next generation of healthcare workers that are serving rural areas. In recent decades, we've seen population patterns shift and hospitals that have struggled with solvency. Rural hospitals have been more likely to close service lines like obstetric care. More than 500 obstetric units have closed since 2010, but we found that essential hospitals are far more likely to have those services than other hospitals. And in obstetric care deserts, or even areas that do have obstetric care, the nearest essential hospital is probably the closest place with a level 3 unit that can treat the most complex patients. Essential hospitals are also more likely to operate services like a neonatal ICU or a burn ward than those other facilities.
Thank you, Evan, for that. I think it's important to note that our main hospital, if any of our members may not be in a rural area, it may be in a city, but we definitely are usually the hospital in that area that ends up taking care of people in rural areas when it comes to those things. So thank you for pointing that out. Chris, being with one of our members, you have a kind of boots on the ground type of view on this. Can you talk a little bit about Spartanburg's work with the rural communities in places like Union and Cherokee counties in South Carolina? And how do you balance access with quality there?
Jason, thank you. And thank you, AH, for inviting me to speak today. Let me level set just briefly to describe our organization. We have 6 hospitals, 2 nursing homes, 1 LTAC, and over 100 medical practices, and are sole provider for 2 of the larger communities in South Carolina that we serve. For those of you not familiar with South Carolina, Spartanburg Regional Healthcare System is in the upstate. That would be the furthest west and north portion of South Carolina, about an hour south of Asheville, North Carolina, and about an hour and 15 minutes or so west of Charlotte. Again, to give you an idea of our system, we'll have about 225,000 emergency department visits through the course of the year at our hospitals, and about 4.6 million provider visits in offices, close to 30,000 surgical procedures. But today we're going to be focused mostly on rural care. So I want to talk briefly about both Cherokee and Union Medical Centers. Cherokee County is a very large geographic area encompassing about 390 square miles. Union County is even larger than that, but has a tiny population of 27,000. Cherokee has a population of about 56,000. And by comparison, Spartanburg County, where our level 1 trauma center sits, has about 356,000 people. So we are certainly dealing with rural health in these 2 very, very large disparate communities. The poverty level in Union County is around 23%, and in Cherokee County around 17%, and a large proportion of the people in Union and Cherokee County under the age of 65 have disabilities, and many do not have health insurance. So it is a set of counties and communities that needs quite a bit of extra support, and we do the best we can to provide that.
Thank you for that data and information, Chris. You know, I think beyond the geographical kind of differences that we're talking about here, technology is a big part of this, and technology allows us to reach people kind of no matter where they live. So, Chris, how are you all leveraging technologies to reach more people? We know telehealth is a big deal. So I guess jump into the telehealth conversation, but even if there's anything in addition to that, that'd be great.
So we use technology quite a bit. As you can imagine, when you've got a rural community, they're not going to be able to have a lot of subspecialty care. It's just simply not going to be feasible to do that. Cherokee Hospital, Cherokee Medical Center, has about 33 active inpatient beds and an emergency department of about 20 beds. Union Medical Center, a brand new medical center that we just opened, and we'll touch on how that came about perhaps a little bit later. But a brand new medical center has 15 inpatient beds and 10 emergency department beds. So we're talking about some fairly small facilities. That said, each of them has significant primary care and OB availability for the outpatient. Down at Union, we've got a cancer clinic. So we're able to offer some services to folks who really struggle to get out of their communities for care. And one of the things we've done is unite with a platform called Unite Us. Unite Us is a way of capturing information from patients and then connecting them through a network of community resources. So this might be food banks, it might be transportation resources, it might be social workers. And the interesting thing about that is that from our end, it works really well. Our case managers, nurses, and physicians can access the Unite Us platform through Epic and put forth a request to these resources to connect with our patients. The downside is that if those resources are not technologically savvy, even though they're connected, they often don't use the technology real well. So we still do a lot of just pick up the phone and call someone or go visit, and a lot of paper gets moved back and forth from one place to another to help these folks. The second part of it, though, is telemedicine. And while a lot of facilities would certainly be aware of and using telemedicine for things like stroke care and psychiatric care in your acute care hospitals, we've also employed it as a way of connecting our acute care hospitals from one to another and keeping people in the communities that they live in. So, for instance, if a patient has a heart problem, it doesn't necessarily need to be transferred to the main level one trauma center, but the physician needs a consult, maybe needs a little bit of extra help for that patient, we'll perform an intra-telemedicine visit and allow the cardiologist to speak with the patient and our hospitalist and manage the patient remotely. And that's worked really, really well. It's a nice way of keeping people in the places that they live. It's wonderful for their families, and for most of the patients, they really appreciate it.
And, you know, I think folks know this, but this happens all across the country, right? In every state, there's a rural component, and this is not just something unique to South Carolina or Appalachia or that part of the country. So, you know, Evan, let's kind of zoom out a little bit with you here. What is the overall impact that you see in telehealth having for our members writ large?
Yeah, it's a huge question. I think one of the really emerging questions of this decade. In 2022, essential hospitals had 3.9 million audio visits and 6.7 million video visits using telehealth services. The Federal Communications Commission estimates that 26 million Americans, mostly in rural communities, still lack access to high-speed internet, though. So audio-only telehealth allows these patients, many of whom are older Americans, to still access the care that they need from the comfort of their home. much like you, Jay, I grew up in a small town in rural Maine. I was a chronic disease patient. I think we all know the stories of people who had to drive hours for routine medical care, and telehealth has allowed our hospitals and hospitals around the country to provide better care to more patients more easily. And it's a common refrain that we've heard time and time again. But there's also some other new technologies that I also want to talk about and that Chris has really effectively underscored. So one of these other novel developments that we've heard about is Project Echo. University of New Mexico, an Essential Hospital member, developed this model in 2003, which allows these larger, more equipped hospitals to train providers that are based in other healthcare settings that are more rural or less well-resourced. So the initial Project Echo program allowed hepatitis C patients who were living in rural areas to achieve the same health outcomes as patients who are living very close to specialized facilities. That initial success has now been replicated and expanded around the world as Project Echo has continued to be expanded and used by essential hospitals around the country. Today, Project Echo also operates other systems where remote specialists are able to directly consult with a provider who has hands on a patient and share their expertise through that provider, much like Chris was outlining as well with Spartanburg Services. Developments in how care is delivered is making it possible to treat patients from a wider geographic radius, as well as other programs like the Acute Hospital Care at Home program are allowing essential hospitals to serve patients far, far beyond the walls of their main hospital campus.
And I'll remind our listeners, we did a podcast in this series on the hospital home program. So encourage folks to go check that out as well. Part of this also is the economic factors, right? And the workforce that our hospitals bring to the rural communities. And Chris, go back to you for a second here. Can you speak to, I guess, both the challenges and the victories that are associated with the healthcare workforce in these rural areas or in your rural area specifically?
Sure. So in Union County, as I mentioned, there are only 26,000, 27,000 people that live in that county. We employ over 500 in the hospital there. I mentioned we recently built a brand new hospital. In fact, just opened a few weeks ago. If you're coming to Union County in South Carolina, you got to come visit. It is gorgeous. But the reason we built it was because the old building that had been the hospital for the last 100 years really was in a state of disrepair. We had acquired the building out of bankruptcy from Union County, and recognizing that the people of Union County would be completely without health care had we not stepped in as an organization and taken over the operations of the hospital. It really made a difference to that community, not just the health care, but also the economics of it. And just a couple of days ago, we were told that a company is moving in nearby and will be employing 700 people. That is a massive, massive economic development boost for a county like that. And that happens, I think, fairly frequently in these rural areas when a company, a hospital, a healthcare organization is committed to that community. Everyone knows we're not going anywhere. We are going to be there for the next 100 years and the 100 years after that. And I think that really helps other businesses to say, you know what, we can be a part of this. So we're really, really proud of that. From an education perspective, I think it's also from workforce development perspective, it's important to recognize what you have to do to keep an engaged and active workforce. We have multiple programs throughout our organization to help educate and train people for healthcare. It starts with high school students getting shadowing programs and internship programs over the summer. We have multiple nursing education programs that we link with the local nursing schools and community colleges. And quite frankly, if anyone asks for an educational opportunity, we do the best we can to provide it because we recognize that we have to grow our workforce from the communities that we support. And we've been very, very successful with that.
Yeah, you know, thank you for pointing those kind of points out. When we talk about healthcare policy, we sometimes just focus on the policy and the patients and payments and entities, et cetera, and don't always talk about the impact of workforce. So it's great to spend a few minutes talking about that. And, you know, Evan, kind of going back to you to give that kind of zoomed out perspective and kind of how essential hospitals across the country as a group or some examples of how they work to mitigate shortages in rural areas.
Yeah, I think Chris did a really good job here of underscoring how central hospitals are the solution to the problem. But I'll lay out a little bit more of the problem as it stands. So setting the stage pretty broadly here, we understand that rural communities are facing critical shortages of healthcare workers and that these challenges have been exacerbated at hospitals that operate with lower margins. Despite 20% of Americans living in rural areas, only 11% of physicians live in rural areas. So 3 in 5 health professional shortage areas are in rural or partially rural areas, according to the Health Resources and Services Administration. That means that a reliance on staffing agencies, locum tenens agreements, and other short-term solutions come at great financial cost for the hospitals who are least able to bear those costs. But unfortunately, these problems are continuing. HRSA estimates that by 2035, there will be projected shortage of 111,000 full-time equivalent physicians across all specialties. That makes developing the healthcare workforce vital for the continued health and safety of Americans everywhere. But essential hospitals are a key part of that solution, and they're already doing great work in this field. More than 80% of essential hospitals are teaching institutions, and each essential hospital is training on average 231 physicians compared to 84 at other teaching institutions. Now, as folks may know, there's a strict cap set by statute, which limits the number of slots a hospital receives federal funding for. Despite this cap on graduate medical education, essential hospitals are investing in the next generation of workforce far beyond what they're authorized to receive funding for. While many teaching hospitals are training above their cap, essential hospitals are training on average 30% more than their GME is authorized to compensate them for. As Americans are aging and we're on this cusp of a major generational shift as the major wave of retirements come in, it's absolutely necessary that we have enough physicians to treat this new retiring workforce. And essential hospitals are taking major steps to meet these demands. What Congress needs to do, and I think what we all have recognized here and the work that Spartanburg is doing and the work that America's essential hospitals are doing, is to advocate for increased graduate medical education, increasing investments and supporting the investments in hospitals like Spartanburg and those other essential hospitals that are helping place physicians in these under-resourced communities and in these places that are absolutely needing care.
Chris, before we break, I want to give you one last opportunity to highlight something maybe we didn't get to talk about already in the work of your hospital in these rural communities.
Jason, thank you. I think it's probably pretty helpful for many of our members to hear this. And I know a few are probably doing something similar, but we've had some great success with a mobile integrated healthcare community paramedic program. This started out of a need to prevent readmissions, improve mortality rates and complication, particularly in our rural communities where we were seeing many no-shows for appointments, where we're seeing people coming in time after time after time for what many of the clinicians felt were preventable reasons. So we started a community paramedic program about 5 years ago, initially through a Duke endowment grant. There were a few bumps along the way, particularly as COVID interrupted a lot of what we were attempting to do. So really, it got moving about 2 years ago. That said, I'll cut straight to the chase. The Duke endowment grants covered over the last 5 years about $400,000 or so for those of you who are counting the beans. We have probably saved some millions of dollars in readmissions, mortality, and improved care. And to give you an idea of how this works, we have a couple of community paramedics that are linked into our heart failure clinics throughout all of our facilities, and they go and visit patients. And this is truly taking care of patients where they are. I'll give you two examples. We have one very old gentleman that our paramedic visits on a regular basis. He lives in a food desert in a very rural portion of rural Union County. And by his own words, he would never even get to the mailbox if we didn't come to his home. He lives alone. He insists on living alone. And until recently, he's been able to do that. But it meant that he was calling 911 every time he had a problem. And he would be in the hospital every few weeks, mostly for completely preventable things. So our community paramedic visits him on a regular basis, takes care of his medications, sometimes gives him a dose of IV Lasix or something else, makes sure that everything is the way it should be. And then they'll have a telehealth visit with the nurse practitioner in the heart failure clinic. And through that constant care, this gentleman has not only survived, but thrived. And I think that's really, really important when we talk about healthcare. It's not just about keeping people out of the hospital. It's about improving their quality of life. And this is just a really great story. And we've got a few others like that where people have, we like to say, we try to graduate them from the program. The initial intent was avoid the readmissions, avoid the bad things from happening, and hopefully they would be out of the program within a few months. And what we find is that virtually all the folks that we have in the program tell our paramedic and tell our clinic, we really don't want to graduate at all. We want to stay with you. We love the paramedics. We love the nurse practitioners. And quite frankly, from our perspective, from an administrative perspective and a physician's perspective, these folks are getting great care and they are avoiding the readmissions. And again, they're thriving instead of just surviving. So a lot more detail to that, of course, but I think it's worth pointing out that many of these programs, although they may on the face of it appear to be losers in terms of dollars spent, you are saving money and you're investing in what matters, which is the people in those communities. So I think these are great things to do. I know a lot of communities will have programs like this and others, and I think that's a message that needs to get to politicians and other folks who create policy to help them understand that there are things out there that are not just about going to a hospital and getting medicines.
Thanks, Chris. And I think that's a great place to kind of wrap up and just say again to our listeners that essential hospitals throughout the country are out there kind of leading the way, meeting patients where they are in every type of community across the country, but especially in the more rural areas of the country. So that is it for today. And I want to thank both Dr. Lombardozzi for his work at one of our member hospitals, kind of helping lead the charge, taking care of those communities that are in rural America, and Evan internally helping lead our policy decisions as a national association on these issues as well. I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to Health Policy Essentials. Please visit essentialhospitals.org to read more about late-breaking issues pertinent to hospitals at the center of our nation's healthcare safety net.